Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Here's a challenge for you. If I gave you the opportunity to take only one photo with your smartphone that encompassed your whole brand, that told the story of you in a way that speaks to your audience so that they are fully engaged, not only engaged, but motivated to take action, the action that you seek to help them take, what would you include? What would be in the frame of that photo? If you're struggling to think about that right now, there's good news. That photo doesn't have to encompass your full brand, your full story. We are different people to different people, as my guest today says. However, there are a few little things that you can do to tell a visual story, even if you have one shot. And that's what we're going to talk about today. What's up, storytellers? Welcome back to the Storytelling Lab podcast. This is episode 140. 140 episodes we have been doing this, and each time with a unique storyteller, a unique lens into the world of storytelling. And today my guest is Alana Sparrow, and I am very excited about her unique take on storytelling. Alana is a creative director and an all-around creative and a personal brand expert. And I first saw her content on LinkedIn where she was talking about exactly the scenario that I placed in front of you just a few seconds ago of how you can use visual storytelling to tell the story of your brand, to connect with your audience. Now, my version of visual storytelling is video. That's how I'm a filmmaker. That's how I've always told my stories. But I really love that concept of thinking about, no, your headshots, your branded photos should all be telling a story, and you should be conscious of what that story is, and it should be understood and received by your audience so that each piece of content that you create, no matter if it's 2D or 3D or if it's moving pictures or if it's a still graphic, it should be able to resonate with your audience. And if you're not able to do that, something is not right. And it probably starts with you understanding how to represent yourself and your brand. Alana has this great line that she says in the show, I should be able to see a soul. I should be able to feel emotion in that photo. These are the things that she helps her clients think about when they're creating their visuals, when they're creating their branding. It's so easy to neglect the small things that we can do to enhance our brand. We know the big things, and we get caught up trying to expect ourselves to be able to perform in a way that a bigger brand can with their budget and their resources, and not understanding that, hey, branding is not just putting money behind social media ads. It's everything that you do. As I like to say, it's the story that others tell about you. Alana is an all-around creative, and she has always been this way. I love that her journey towards being a creative, towards being an artist, started at such an early age. And because of that, she has a completely versatile perspective on the world of creativity, of personal branding. And this episode is chock full of gems for you to apply it to your personal brand strategy today. So Here is my conversation with Alana Sparrow, and I hope that you love it.
Welcome to the Storytelling Lab, where we break down how to get to the heart of your story and the hearts of your audience to leave the greatest impact possible. And now, here's your host, award-winning filmmaker and writer, Rainn Bennett.
What's up, my beautiful people? Welcome to another episode of the Storytelling Lab, where we help you break down the art and science of storytelling. My name is Rainn Bennett. I am your host, and my job is to help you deepen your connections, increase your sales, and serve your audiences better. Every Tuesday morning, I send out a quick storytelling tip to my newsletter subscribers. I show you techniques I've learned along my journey and used in my own stories, as well as those of my clients. But most importantly, I leave you with tangible takeaways that you can apply to your brand storytelling immediately. Oh, well, actually, more importantly than that, it's free. If this would help you, sign up for the newsletter at rainnbennett.com/weekly-storytelling-tips. Alana, welcome to the Storytelling Lab.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I'm very excited. We don't know each other that well, so I'm really excited about that because I will, this is probably no secret. Maybe all podcasters do this. I started this for a lot of selfish reasons, right? So I like to learn just as much as my audience does. So that was one of the reasons that I saw some of your content and immediately just thought you had a really fresh take on storytelling. That's what excites me about the show so much is that it's not just storytelling for this. We talk to all different kinds of storytellers about the power of stories, how we can use stories in our overall personal and professional lives. So I guess let's start from the beginning. You and I talked before we started the show. You're also a documentary filmmaker, among other things like I am too, which I want to dive into. Yeah. But how would you, like, what is your background when you go to your roots? What do you identify as in terms of your profession?
Well, I think it still goes back to that visual storyteller. You know, I'm formally trained as a designer, so communication, you know, that visual communication, breaking down words into visuals so that we can read on, you know, different levels. And I came later in life through my business partner and husband into filmmaking or through video. So that aspect of it kind of, again, you know, came a bit later, but that's my roots, really, is in that 2D communication.
Right.
And what I love about video is it brings, has the potential to bring all of those things together.
That's a good point. Can I ask how you navigate working with your partner, with your husband? Is that too personal? Because it's got to be have its own challenges, but also really cool that you can do that.
Yeah, you know, we came together kind of almost through business. So that made it easier. And we have really complementary styles, but 100%. People don't usually know when we come in together unless we tell them that we're husband and wife. But it usually on the set, it usually ends up popping out.
Yeah.
Because well, that casualness and candor that you get with one another, or if you're frustrated, you know, it, you might manage it a little bit differently than.
Yeah. Light hand on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. That I've held his hand a few times in meetings and vice versa.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's beautiful. I think it for sure must have helped that, that you came together through business, but, let's go back to the visual aspect of storytelling. I totally agree. Video is this, amalgamation of all the beautiful forms and mediums. I was really struck by the post that I saw that you posted, on LinkedIn was about visual storytelling, specifically on like branded photos. So people think of headshots and things like that. That's what caught my eye. And the stance was, and I'll paraphrase and summarize in just one sentence, but it was essentially like your branded photos can and should tell a story. But I want you to put it in your own words because I thought it was very interesting take. And so basically the implication is, if I take a photo for my website for, you know, headshot, a proper headshot or not, you can convey your story about your brand through that. How does one approach that?
How we approach that is It depends on, you know, first off, it depends on the brand. So if we're talking about a corporate brand versus a individual brand, we work a lot with corporations that they want to be perceived as personable. They want to be perceived as friendly as a brand. So that doesn't necessarily mean that every person we photograph, that that's their natural stance or how they want to be conveyed. But so what we do with them is we spend a lot of time talking with people in advance of their portraits, if we're taking portraits. But if we're working with somebody with a personal brand, obviously we've gone through the whole strategy piece and we understand what it is that they want to put forward as their personal brand and what their most natural state is. And I will tell you, almost 95% of most people tell me they hate having their photograph taken. They hate how they look in photographs. And that's really heartbreaking to me because, you know, it's why? Like, what is that? And I think part of it is that we look at this still moment in time and we think that it encompasses everything that we are. And it doesn't. It 100% doesn't. We can have so many, we have different personas as individuals. We are different people to different people. And we can show up differently depending on where we are. And I think that that is something that when we take photos, we really go through, what I love to do is go through the exercise of those different personas to really get to the heart of who a person is and what communicates their energy the best. And that's what makes, you know, portraiture really exciting for me, and especially with branding, because there's so many opportunities.
Absolutely. I think you said we are different people for different people. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
I love that. It's so true. However, we often think that we can't or shouldn't do that, maybe, at least with branding.
Right.
You know, we think we have to be this for everybody, but I think that's such an accurate and important point to make is, you know, we are personally and professionally the way we move. So I think that's freeing if people can really understand that. What are some simple tips? Like where can someone, if they're taking a photo, or they have a photo session, what are some of the pieces of the photo that can be manipulated, you know, I don't love that word for the connotation, but to enhance their story, like emerging from that photograph. Mm-hmm. Is that making sense?
Yeah. And so the relationship really has to start with the photographer. Hmm. I never expect a subject to come in and know what to do. That's not their job. I mean, unless they're a paid professional model, then I might have a different expectation because they're showing up differently. They know how to bring a different character, a different persona. That's their job. But when it's not a professional model, it's really the photographer's the professional. They're the ones that can best bring that out. And some are really good at it and others are less so because they're more technical. They're more concerned about just the lighting, and or maybe they take a very sort of traditional approach over and over and over. And even with a traditional approach, I still feel like emotion really should come through. I should be able to see a soul behind the eyes. Even if it's serious, I still need to feel emotion. And, you know, I had somebody ask on that post, is it always required to smile? And it's not, but what you can do, like with a big, you know, toothy smile or, you know, even a closed mouth smile, we'd go through a whole different series because some people are very self-conscious of, you know, their smiles for all different kinds of reasons, or it might exaggerate features on their face that make for, you know, maybe a less balanced image of them. I don't want to say it's unattractive, but yeah. Maybe it is. I definitely have taken many, many unattractive photos. But where I'm going with that is that we do micro expressions. So if you're standing there and you're very serious, I have different techniques and tricks to express with the eyes. because you can smile strictly with your eyes. I don't have to move my mouth at all.
Absolutely.
In order for that to happen.
When we were just talking about, you know, this saying of you know, this still moment doesn't have to encompass all of us. This is kind of a fundamental question. Generalist or specialist?
Me?
We can start there, but then let's dive into it a little bit, because it's also can be a philosophy, right? But of course, it depends on the person. But let's start with you. But I really want to dive into the preconceived notions and then maybe characteristics, because you know, I'll ask you first. Yeah, how do you?
Okay, I just need clarification on the question. So
sure.
You're saying generalist or specialist? Are you talking about my like specialty in my work? Or I just want to get clarity on.
Yeah, I am talking about the idea that some people might have that they need to do this and be this and specialize in that and that only, versus what I think that you are, which is similar to me, which is like I do this kind of broad thing in a lot of different aspects of it. But some people think that that would or could spread somebody thin, and they wouldn't really be able to do deep work and focus on any one of those channels.
Sure. And I think it depends on the person.
Totally.
You know, because some people excel very well being a generalist, because they truly can bring different things to the table, because maybe they've worn multiple hats. You know, I'm a creative director. So what that means is I wear a lot of hats. I've held a lot of different roles throughout my career. That's what's required of a creative director. So if I were going out and, you know, getting a corporate job, that probably would be one of the top roles I would go after. That is not for everyone. And for some people, niching in is better. In our business, we've chosen not to niche, because we can bring those same qualities and level of expertise to different sectors. And frankly, having experience in multiple different sectors, it's allowed us to really elevate the work that we will bring to a sector that might be unrelated. So let's say, for instance, doing work in a medical space, you have to bring in a lot of empathy, and you're kind of pulling that out. Now, how do you bring that over to engineers? And why does that matter, that engineers need to be empathetic? Well, it does, because we're people, and all people need to be empathetic. So I don't know if that answered the question fully, but that's
it gave me an answer. Yes. No, I mean, none of this is like, you know, X is the answer, right? I mean, this is all just big picture.
I'm not a hardline person about many things.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, we're going to talk more about that, because I've seen that stance in some of your content. And so I want to keep, because neither am I, but even someone in the comments has said, like, I would love to be a generalist, but yes, I've heard otherwise. For the longest time, Alana, in my world, I like compartmentalized different parts of my identity that actually have this very interesting and unique intersection if you just let them go and let them organically run into each other. But for much of my life, I'm like, you know, pushing them apart as far as I can. And it's like, why are you doing that? Well, somebody or, you know, something made me feel that way. What was the moment where you felt like this was the path that you wanted to take? I don't want to say your calling, but you know, did you always anticipate being, not necessarily being a creative director, but being a creative working in the space that you do?
Mm. Yeah, that's an easy question. My path was very straight lined. You know, I was a little artist as a young kid. That sounds so cliche, but I was. And in high school, I didn't take art classes in high school. I took art classes at the community college.
Nice.
And then one of the high school... but I didn't understand that there was a path to earning a living as an artist. I didn't get that until a high school art teacher said, "You're incredibly talented, apply for this scholarship and go." And it was graphic design. And I didn't know what that was. And I'll tell you this, in my sophomore year, I switched my major to painting, because I said, I'm not doing any more cutouts of blow dryers. This is not going to be my bag. This is not for me. This stinks. So I switched to painting. I got really good at painting, and then I came to my senses and realized I actually do want to earn money. And I don't know, I had a change of heart. So I ended up leaving there with kind of dual degree, a bunch of extra credits. And so I did go into graphic design, and I really was able to find my way. And I wanted the creative director role because I saw in one of my very first jobs what that role did and meant. And I was just, I want that. That's the crown that I want. And I liked the control that you had in every aspect of,
yeah,
you know, of what you were doing.
Absolutely. I think too many or too few advisors in our lives don't, historically, maybe it's changed now, don't really help, you know, creative and artistically driven youth understand that there are plenty of paths to, you know, financial stability, right? It's always like, oh, what are you going to do with that? Like, get a job, you can do your painting at night. Took me a long time to figure out, and maybe there's more options now with, you know, tech and social media and all the things that have, you know, come into the world and the market. But, you know, that always frustrated me, whereas like there are so many different paths that you can use your creative skills to make a living, a good living.
Yes. Well, if I could digress for a moment, when I got that art scholarship, my dad said, no way. Absolutely not. He's a boomer. There's no way. He thought that was the dumbest idea I had ever come to the table with. And he finally relented and said, I tell you what, I'll support this endeavor if you go get a trade first, your senior year. And I said, what's a trade? And he said, go talk to your guidance counselor. So I went in and I talked to the guidance counselor, and I said, you know, I didn't know. And she gives me this list, and I said, well, I'm not going to be a mechanic. And the only thing that was even remotely interesting to me on the list was beauty school. I said, okay, I'll go do that. So I did. It's the best advice my dad ever gave me, because not only did I get licensed, I worked my way through college. I made money, regular money, while working through college and in my summers. And then when I entered into the market in the first giant recession of 1990, I had a job doing that until I got my first gig at an agency. And it was just the best advice. And yeah, so anyway, that's a funny story.
Absolutely. Shout out to Pops. And yeah. I would probably wager that some of the things you learned in that school, you're still applying to the creative and branding work that you do today.
Absolutely. But the one thing that I did really learn is the return on the investment in your education. So I ended up going into higher ed. I taught for 7 years as a professor of graphic design. And at one point in my life, I really thought, this is it. I'm hanging up industry, only freelancing. And I'm going, this is it. This is my path. What I realized once I got in there, because we are pumping too many kids into these formal liberal arts educations that have zero aptitude for it, they're not prepared for it, they have zero desire to be there, and we're pulling them out of the trades and putting them into places where they don't really belong, and that it's expensive. And so if you're there and you leave with some flaky degree or you barely get out, and we've oversaturated the market with designers. And how are you going to get the ROI back on that? I got the ROI back on my beauty school the first year it was bought and paid for. So I don't know. I think I hijacked your question, but I'm sorry about that.
This is a dance for two, Alana. You are 50% of this conversation. By all means, hijack away. Totally yeah. Fine. I love the story about your father. I also love the art teacher. I mean, we always have these mentors, right? Of storytelling, right? That help us through these transitional stages. Who else, who inspires you now?
Now? Oh my goodness.
Besides me.
Yeah. No, it seems really cliche, but my husband and my partner, I mean, we Beautiful. Truly do inspire each other, and we share this love of storytelling so deeply, and like, that's just such a hard thing to come by, and to really have that person that, you know, goes back and forth. I have some other friends and colleagues that we're kind of on shared journeys. Like I've got one that we're learning AI together. And so, you know, our email, or not emails, but our text messages are filled with batting things back and forth. And, you know, we go on these AI battles together. And so I just surround myself with people that are just really inspiring.
This brings up an interesting follow-up question. How important to the creative process is a supportive community like that? Or is it something that, hey, some people can do it in a vacuum or like isolated, or is that camaraderie and that kind of support and cheering each other on? How important is it?
Well, geez, if there's anybody that can do it in a vacuum and be successful, then they need to box that and sell it, because I don't know. I need my people. Yeah. Because creating work in your own head, it's really hard to, be discerning. You know, you can kind of fall in love with your own ideas, and, you know, that's really, I can be really guilty of that. I get very hung up on, you know, it's like, oh, I like those words. I like those three words, but then I'll show it to my husband. He's like, I don't understand what you're saying. It's like, it makes no sense, you know? So, whether it's design or what have you, you know, because we can't always see the things that are right in front of us because we're fixated on, you know, the other shiny object on the page. So,
absolutely.
Collaboration is very, and feedback is a critical part of my creative process.
Yeah. I mean, it's everything. It's interesting. You know, I've always been kind of a, you know, solopreneur, wing it, build a plane as you fly it type of guy. And now I'm a co-founder at a new startup, which is like first time I've been with a real team, you know, really building something with a lot of opportunity. And the lessons I learn are, you know, a huge bucket of them every day, but especially that one about feedback. Like I might have an idea, and if I'm in by myself, I'll blindly go along with it because I think it's a great idea. And now with proper feedback, it either validates that good idea or it says, hey, you might not be right. you know, let's listen to your audience. Let's listen to the market. Let's listen to your other teammates, et cetera. So yeah, I agree with that.
It makes it a less lonely experience because being a solopreneur is incredibly lonely, especially if you're one that's strictly online. There could be personalities out there that don't agree with that, but I'm an intro, intro, outro, tend to be more of the intro. But I still need that connection to other people live, like in real life.
Yeah, we all do. I've got a, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs pyramid right beside me. And, you know, connection and belonging is like one of the biggest ones, right? No, that's so true. Being a solopreneur is lonely. I almost cried just now when you said that. let's get into some of the nitty gritty nuts and bolts. Okay. How early should one think about brand, consciously think about brand? If you're starting something new, a new project, a new business, is it ever too early to start having those questions? Because it does pull you away and some of your time and resources away from what you're doing, but it's also very important. Any thoughts on like where it falls in the sequencing?
It should be the moment you come up with an idea, it should be parallel instantly in my mind, because an idea that just drives forward without that time spent understanding what are those values, like what are you doing with that idea, who is that for, you know, that sort, you know, that kind of thing, and what sort of face do you want it to have out there in the world. And if you're thinking about the branding aspect of it at the same time you're developing the idea, it will be so much more cohesive and developed. I've seen so many people go so far out of the gate with zero consideration, you know, to the brand, or vice versa. They're so focused on like, what is the brand, but their idea is still, you know, floundering out there. And that's a very difficult thing to brand. We've encountered that where it's like, you want us to brand, but you don't even really have your idea totally worked out. So they really are something that needs to be kind of done on a parallel, if that makes sense. And I'm not talking about the visual identity, which is a deeper down the line.
Yeah, and a part of brand, right? Not brand, but people often conflate the, you know, they often
don't understand that, like, you know, if you think of it like marketing, so marketing is our umbrella, and then you have all these other things that happen underneath marketing, like personal branding, and, you know, branding itself falls under that, can fall under that umbrella. Well, branding is that overarching, and all kinds of things under, you know, exist underneath brand and branding. It's
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you see that all the time where people aren't quite sure where that fits. But I think, like you said, you can't focus so much on that alone, or the idea and the execution alone. And if you do it right, they're both informing each other. One hand is helping the other. So, like, if you have a question about the idea, brand might have the answer, and vice versa. So
right.
I totally agree. I think that's important. That's what I'm learning in life and business, you know, at least, is that it's never, you know, heart or head. It's always a combination of the two. It's never art and science. It's the combination of the two. And really finding where that line is. To that point, you have a business, mm-hmm. and you have a strong personal brand.
Yes.
How do you navigate that in terms of how you show up, in terms of how and when and how much they intersect? You know, how do you determine how much is that that overlap? What's a personal brand post or a business post, right? You know, I know a lot of people struggle with this. In fact, if we could really simplify the question, it's like, I know people have struggled with, should I start, you know, Rain Bennett Instagram profile or 6 second stories Instagram mm-hmm. profiles? And then, of course, you can expand that into much bigger.
Yeah.
Question.
So for me, they're one and the same. There's no differentiation. I am the face of my brand,
okay.
My business. That's it. You know, even though my business has a name and I have a partner, he's also, it's the same for him. He's definitely super behind the scenes. Like we often joke that if I dropped it tomorrow, you know, but he'd be fine, but he's just not, he's much.
The kitchen would be working, but there would be no server.
He's never even been on social media. I mean, you know, he's just, that's not his thing. That's why he has me. And that's totally okay. Not everybody needs to be out there.
Right.
They just don't. It's not required. But as far as how I show up, I've always just showed up as me, as my brand, that they truly are one and the same. And in terms of how you manage it on social, you have to pay attention to how social handles business versus personal profiles. They are friendlier to personal profiles. So you need to leverage that. And you should have a presence for your business, but I don't put a ton of energy into my business profiles because the platforms just don't give them that much love. So I only have so much time and energy to go around. And so I choose to focus on the personal.
Absolutely. And people want to identify with and connect with people, right?
It's we do business with people. We don't do business with brands or widgets or boxes or, you know, we do business with people.
Do you think that changes, or maybe the question is, how much does that change when the business is not necessarily just an extension of you, but you you know, like me, I'm a co-founder. I have a team, you know, it's a business that is separate from me, but there's certainly alignment because it's in the storytelling space. So we stand for similar things. How much does that change if there's a company that you're a piece of or a part of and then also have a personal brand?
Yeah. So I think a really good way to do that is, so if you're a founder of that company, I still feel like you kind of sit in the same space that I am. If you're a founder, even if you have a broader team, you're still the face of that company and it's still woven because you created it. But let's say you're the CEO or chair of a bank where they become larger sort of amalgamations. That is different. However, so being able to put so much of your personal self into that, it has to be in alignment with the brand because they're kind of running the show as well. But I don't know that we see nearly enough of personal branding happening with larger companies. I think it's they either just kind of sit back or they post a lot of fluffy stuff that isn't really there to sort of drive business revenue or talk about, you know, the brand or elevate the brand. It's more of, you know, oh, I'm going to this networking thing, or oh, we were out on the golf course, or oh, we're, you know, and that's frankly, that's how I lived on LinkedIn for years. I never used LinkedIn the way I use it. I'm using it now. I used it solely to say, hey, clap for us. We just did this project. Clap for our client. We just did this project. Or, you know, I'm walking for this challenge or what have you. It was very superficial. You know, it's more of just a scrapbook.
Yeah, that's nicely said. I think at that point, Alana, I think it becomes like in their minds, and obviously I'm speculating, like a risk thing. Like, I don't want, you know, everything, once you start to have a big machine operating, then it's like, don't want to mess with that. You know, it's risky, or I might say the wrong thing, or et cetera, et cetera. But I agree with you. I would love to see more of that. And then, of course, you do have the big name personal brands that have a business that probably operates just because of that personal brand. You know, the Oprahs and the Gary V's of the world. But I agree. Like, I would love to see more content. Maybe they're just more behind the scenes folks.
Yeah, it could be. I think part of it is, I think risk is a big part of it. I think time is a big part of it.
For sure.
You're really busy. I mean, producing content, it's extremely busy. So I think that those people, and even myself, you know, I'm going to get to a point too with this. It's been an interesting exercise, but once it starts doing its job, which my job is not content creation, that is not my job. There are a lot of solopreneurs on LinkedIn that is their primary job or driving job is creating content for themselves or for other people. That's not my focus. That's not really what I want to do. I'm off doing other, you know, other things that I'm selling. So it's an interesting take. And so I think a lot of those other CEOs, that is what they are busy doing. But I think fear comes in from not knowing, right? You know, so if you get yourself educated on what that should look like, it also comes without strategy. So I think you minimize risk when you have strategy and you know what your voice is, you know what your story is, you know what the goal is. It's less scary and it's also less risky.
Absolutely. Speaking of LinkedIn, you know, it seems like you spend a lot of time, you know, at least on social media, on LinkedIn and Instagram. Mm-hmm. And you told us that you used to approach LinkedIn differently. Mm-hmm. So my question is, how do you show up in both of those spaces? Is it differently? How do you leverage one versus the other? Is it the complete same and you're just reposting content to the other platform?
No, in my situation, they're remarkably different. My Instagram was started off as just a purely personal channel where I shared art, fishing. It really didn't have any focus. I used it just as a play space, and it got hijacked at one point when I started growing out my natural gray hair and people just started following me and they loved it, and it went viral. And when I say it got hijacked, it literally got hijacked. And then I decided to, well, I'll just roll with it. This is a thing. And it ended up becoming this space where all the really important passion things to me in my life, I now had an outlet, an audience who gave a shit. if I can say that.
But yes, that, too late now.
Yeah. So it was just and that's just what I've run with that over there. And so now what I'm doing is, and I've always talked about what I do by day. That's part of it. But I can literally talk about anything over there. Nothing is taboo on that channel. And that's what I love about it. LinkedIn, less so.
Yeah. That's so freeing, it sounds like, and also pulls pieces of you out that weren't work-related that are still part of you. And now we're back at the point where we were just making earlier about people follow and relate to other people. You're just being yourself. That's really interesting and yes. Awesome.
So in some ways, it's like this live diary. I mean, it's not that, I don't get that crazy, but it's because I'm not like writing and posting every day. There was during COVID, I did a lot because I had a lot of time on my hands, but it really is an opportunity for me to broach onto subjects and topics that we might make films about or things that impact us socially. And I go there, but it doesn't come with its own costs, risks, and exhaustion. Because you start deep conversation like that, you better follow through. You better be prepared to have the full conversation. And that takes time. And it's very tiring to do that in a written format where you're not live and you can't have that very quick discourse back and forth. It's a very different kind of conversation that's kind of analog. Sometimes it's live, but it's very difficult to keep up with every single comment. And, you know, so I have tempered where I'll go because it took too much from me. So, yeah.
Boundaries are important.
Yes.
You know what's so funny and coincidental is just this morning. Are you familiar with the creator Coco Moco? She's real heavy on TikTok, but also Instagram. And she makes me trend predictions and social media predictions and to like very accurate of where she thinks social media or okay. Where trends are going.
I was thinking of somebody else that had a similar name, but no.
Got it. And often on personal brands. And just this morning I was watching her. She's incredible with her like she's always just ahead of the curve in terms of where media is going. And today her post was about you know, specifically hair choices and personal brands. I don't know if you know the hip-hop artist Ice Spice. She's got this big orange, like, curly hair.
Yeah.
Okay, so she showed her, like, when she was in high school, and it completely wasn't anything like that. And then once she started getting, like, recognized was when she made that bold choice of changing her hair. And so everybody in the comments is like, yeah, Lady Gaga when she started, and, you know, Sia and Miley Cyrus, and just started all these examples of, like, when you make a visual you know, change that makes you stand out, it becomes instantly identifiable. And of course it can change later, but people recognize you for that thing. And it really helps elevate that. And then here you just kind of gave a great organic example of that. I just thought it was timely because I had just watched that video today.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's become kind of a signature too.
But right.
You know, it's really interesting with hair and these sort of outward expressions of ourselves, because clothing is that, tattoos are that, makeup, they're outward expressions. They are sort of our visual brand identity. Really, if you think of it in that way, that's what those are and the opportunities that they present. And so for gray hair, or if somebody chose, like say they're thinning and they've choose to shave as yourself.
Wait a minute. Let's not make any assumptions here, Alon.
But those are choices, and they say things about us, right? Yeah. So when I grew my hair out, I got so many things. You're so brave. You're so this. You're so that. And in many ways, it is, because as women, we've been conditioned to not do those things. It's been okay for men to go gray mostly, but for women, it's still. I mean, you're seeing more and more take the leap. But every other day, I mean, if I'm out in public, it's every time I'm out in public. Someone says to me, "You're so brave for doing that. I wish I could do it." And they
it's
think
almost
it,
like, sorry, go ahead. No. It just sounds like it sounded kind of like a backwards compliment. You know, maybe I'm misreading that, but it's like, it looks so good. I wish I were that brave.
Well, no, they genuinely mean it.
Yeah.
they genuinely mean it, that it's to go through the process, because it takes 2 years to grow your hair from here to like where I am. It's, you know, it's not an attractive thing unless, and even if you grow out a little bit and cut your hair, it's like, it's very, it's a thing and it's very public. And you have people asking you about it. It, you know, it's one of these things that it's a commitment, and it, you know, it, you're taking something that's very personal, and now it's, it becomes this thing that people feel like they can talk to you about.
Yeah, that's it. That makes so much more sense. I retract my assumption. I thought it was just the act, but it's the journey you have to navigate after taking the act. That's actually what's brave about it. That's so clear. Yeah. After you said that, I appreciate that. More women are becoming comfortable with it. I think they called it the Ilana effect. That was a joke. you just stared at me like,
I'm like, is that a thing?
Yeah, you did it. Oh my gosh, that was great. That's a very interesting point, and I completely get that. You posted something, this is a good segue, about the evolution of one's personal brand. I don't know when it was, not too long ago. Yeah. And this is a moment where you had a significant leap forward in your evolution. It changed your identity and made people feel comfortable coming up to you on the streets. Let's talk about that conceptually. Should personal brands evolve? When should they evolve? How should they evolve, if so?
I want to pull up that post, if you don't mind. I want to reference what I was actually talking about there, because I do remember that, and I do remember the point that I was making. So if you could give me a moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, brands, in terms of like personal brands, do we want to stick on the topic of personal, or do you want to talk about business brands?
Well, I think that most of your content, in my opinion, I think really strikes the personal brand topics.
Mm-hmm. What I've chose to focus on.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty clear. So let's stay there, because I think this is where a lot of people struggle. And, you know, what was interesting about the topic of the gray hair or the other things you said, the tattoos and the makeup, is like we're kind of back to where we started with like, hey, what's an easy way visually in 2D? Well, that's 3D, but you know what I mean? Like to start to express yourself and tell your story without actually saying it with words. And we kind of landed back there. So yeah, I think personal brand.
Yeah. So my personal brand evolution is kind of hitched to my business brand evolving and needing to evolve. So this kind of came to be, we had kind of lived and thrived on word of mouth in our business for 17 years. So frankly, we did very little. It just work, and that brought more work. And, you know, we just were very fortunate. And as a marketing person living and working in that space, I knew at some point the shoe's probably going to drop on this. Like this, it just keeps going. But, you know, we just never had to do that. We're out there, we're networking, that sort of thing. But it was not really driving anything. COVID happens. We have to switch because we have video is such a huge part. And, you know, it's 2 years of delays. And then we finally get back online with that. I have a personal setback in my family. So that took me offline for almost a year. So when I came back, I'm further behind in my business than I've ever been in 17 years. So now I have to evolve. I have to look at what options do I have? What resources do I have at my fingertips? And that's where, you know, LinkedIn comes into play. And so putting my personal brand out in a way that I've never really done. I've done that in person, but not in this giant public space, right? It's hugely public. So I think evolution, it usually ends up happening when there's a major pain point. You know, it's like, stop the pain. I got to stop the pain, or I've got to stop the bleeding. That's usually when it happens.
Yeah. I think there's a saying that's like change happens for two reasons, vision or crisis.
Yeah.
Most often the latter, maybe.
Most often the latter, because I think if things are going really well, you're not really going to take your eye off that ball.
Fair.
So, and we didn't, our eye was on the ball.
And when you opened the door for the world to see your story, you know, in the personal brand, what were the results that you've seen?
Oh, it's been just remarkable. You know, it's like, it's a little weird because almost the more vulnerable you are, mm-hmm. the more that comes in.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that doesn't come without a price, because it can be cathartic to be very vulnerable and put yourself out there, but it can also too, especially if you're an introvert, it can feel tiring and draining, or you second guess it of like, whoa, was that too much? Should I have not done that? And then also if you have a partner, you have to weigh that out, because I've gone through that on my social, on my Insta, where I've had to really be careful about what I put, because I don't want to drag other people along who have not accepted an invitation to come along.
Yeah. Yeah. I got reprimanded for that one before.
Yes. I always ask permission.
Yes. 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 Well, I learned my lesson.
Well, it's funny. If you see my Instagram post today announcing this, I often put a blur over.
Oh, that was. I was wondering who that was. For those listening, yeah, there was a post with you over looking over a videographer's shoulder whose face was blurred out. Now I get the joke, Alana.
Yes.
That's
my
funny.
Following gets it, but
oh, I get it now. That was great. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I've lost my train of thought now. So I often get asked the question of where's the line between being vulnerable, as you just said, and oversharing. Do you have any tools or techniques to identifying that line? You kind of were alluding to it, like sometimes, you know, it comes with a price when you're being vulnerable. You get some attention, but also you question things.
I don't have advice. Yeah, I think you have to cross it and know where yours is. Yeah. You know, you have to cross it at least once, and then you know.
But so that comes up in a lot of like storytelling workshops, because people are starting to understand, like, if you do open up, you know, it kind of generates connection. And you've kind of said that as well. Why do you think that is, when you're vulnerable, that the more people seem to come to your post or interact or engage with it?
Because we all have those things. So you're mirroring, and it helps people feel seen.
That's everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's, I really think that it's that simple.
How does one, you've got this expression, manufacturing creativity, mm-hmm. that you use a lot. And I think there's a good group of people, a good population of people that think maybe she's born with it. Thanks for the chuckle there. Oh, no. You know, where they think that, oh, he's so creative, she's so creative. But it sounds like what you're implying is that you can manufacture it. How does one go about that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting, because I think the manufacturing creativity is part of where that came from, is like, we're makers. We make so many things. And it's also kind of a spinoff of, you know, where we live in a former mill town, and we have a lot of foundries here. So the name kind of was a riff off of our geography a little bit, but then it really kind of got rooted into the fact that creativity, you're making, there's always going to be a result. So it's not, no, that's not actually true. I guess you can have a creative thought. But in our instance, what we are doing is we are making. We are either making brands, building brands, or physically making things. We built sets for, you know, we build sets for a lot of our video work that we do. And so that's the root of the manufacturing creativity. We're also making creativity, if that makes any sense. It sounds kind of...
No, I'm with it.
But that's it.
And I actually, to your point about a creative thought, no, I agree with you. Like, in my opinion, and maybe it's harsh, but like, it doesn't exist until it exists, right? Like, we all have great ideas, Execution is everything. And so I'm with you 100%. It's something that is made. Yeah. I mean, you can have a creative thought, but then it's just gone unless you turn it into something. And I don't,
I don't say, how many times have you said, "Oh my God, why didn't I think of that?" I thought of that.
I thought of that. Yeah, exactly.
That's the worst one.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. Like, I don't think people understand how, like, how can I word this? Like, I don't want to say unimpressive, but just like everyone, lots of people have great ideas all day long. Like, it's not unique. That's the way I'll put it. It's not unique to have a great creative thought, in my opinion. What's unique is having the gumption, the wherewithal, the discipline, the commitment to actually execute that awesome creative thought that you had. And that's why we're back to kind of this balance where it's like, it's art and science, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to show up and work, even though it is emotional. And that's got, like, I get excited because my whole life has kind of existed in between two extremes. And a lot of the work that I do and the conversations I have on this show bring me back to that point. And I just love it so much. What is the next evolution of your personal brand? Where do you think you're headed? Where would you like to head next, if anywhere?
Well, I don't know what the next one is because I'm so early into this one. And, you know, if I have to really think about it, for me, what I want to be able to do is I want to do low volume, high quality work. That's always been my goal. You know, it's always the most bang for the buck. And, you know, if I'm talking about the business side of it, but I want to be able to have time and space to do my very best work. And I've been kind of the opinion that that craft takes time. Craft takes pause. And if, you know, we're having to just like churn and, you know, go 100 miles an hour, the quality is going to come down. You only kind of get to pick, you know, two. You know, there's a whole really great graphic that floated out there in the graphic design community. Maybe you're familiar.
I'm familiar.
I can't remember it all now, but you get to pick.
It's fast, cheap, and quality, right?
Yeah, so you fast, can either, cheap quality.
And you can only have two.
Yeah. And I firmly believe that. And I want more of that in my life. That's really important to me. And especially as, like, you know, I just turned 55 yesterday and I'm kind of, you know, entering that really that the last season-ish, if you will, of that career. And I want the quality of that work. You know, and I see myself as being somebody who will work until the day I die.
Same.
I enjoy it. I enjoy helping people, doing things, contributing in that way. So it's not like, oh, I'm like working till 60 and then I'm going to call it a day. I don't foresee that in my future. But if my personal brand was going to evolve, that is where it would evolve, would be so that I can do the best quality work as possible.
I totally get it. I think that is the goal of all creatives. I believe. I mean, we start off and you kind of have to grind it out at first, but that's what I think where ultimately most of us try to drive high quality, low volume work.
Sounds right. And that's where, you know, it's interesting because I guess if there's an evolution, AI is new to me this year. Well, new in the sense of like I'm heavily utilizing it. That's been a major introduction. And I think if there was going to be an evolution, it's going to be how that finds its way into my work more than it is now. Because everything now that you're seeing on LinkedIn, most like a chunk of those visuals are AI. They're things that I've made. And so what I love about it is the most I love about it is that it truly has freed me up to be more creative. If AI can bring and take care of these rudimentary things that I spend as a creative so much time doing, or I have to pay somebody else to do, so that's money out of my pocket. If that, now I have more space for maybe deeper thinking, maybe higher creativity, maybe elevating an idea, it's a win. It's a win. So that's where I see maybe my brand evolving.
I think that's a great place to stop for today, and so refreshing to hear, because I think a lot of creatives are very nervous about this evolution, this transformation. And I tend to side with you on this. I think that it's, you know, there are certain things it can replace and certain things it can't. And if it does worry you, that might be for a reason that we need to dive into a little bit. But I think what you said was just so beautiful, actually. It's like it opens you up and gives you the freedom to be more creative. Like that's really, really great to hear. Alana, thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
Oh, thanks, Rain. This has been my pleasure, all mine.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully we'll have you back on, and I look forward to seeing your content out there in LinkedIn and Instagram land.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
My name is Rain Bennett. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed that episode, do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast. If you're already a subscriber and you're enjoying the show, give us a review and let us know the value that you've gotten from it. We love to hear from our listeners and learn about the benefits that they're getting from the show. That's what fuels us, and that's what fuels the show. And if you've already subscribed and you've already reviewed it and you think there's someone else that would benefit from listening to this show, please share it with them. The more we grow, the more we can help you grow, and that's what we're here to do. Join us next time on the Storytelling Lab. This podcast is a 6-Second Stories production. 6-Second Stories is a story coaching and consulting company that builds online education, in-person and virtual training, and digital products that help businesses master storytelling to find their ideal customers and market to them effectively. You can learn more at 6secondstories.com and purchase the book 6-Second Stories at Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or RainBennett.com/6secondstories.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.